I would now like to introduce today's moderator, Mike Myers, Heist CEO.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's conference. It's my great pleasure to introduce our next speaker for this session, Amanda Levy. Amanda is the Deputy Director of Health Policy and Stakeholder Relations, where she's responsible for fostering proactive and effective relationships between the DMHC and its stakeholders, while serving as primary advisor to the director on critical issues and providing strategic planning and policy direction on emerging issues and industry trends. Prior to joining the DMHC, Amanda worked for the California Psychological Association, where she served as the Director of Government Affairs. We are very pleased to have Amanda here with us this morning. It's all yours, Amanda. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for the lovely introduction, and thank you all for having me here today. I want to take this opportunity to update you on our organizational changes, talk about priorities in the year ahead for the Department of Managed Healthcare, and provide a few updates on legislation and regulations that will likely be of most interest to you. I apologize in advance. 10 o'clock on Thursdays is when our gardener comes, so it might be a little loud, but hopefully you'll all be able to hear me and get the information, get some of the good information. So we always like to begin every presentation we do for DMHC with a statement, a restatement of our mission statement, which is the California Department of Managed Healthcare protects consumers' healthcare rights and ensures a stable healthcare delivery system. As you can see on this slide, we recently celebrated 20 years, our 20th anniversary of the department, along with a 45-year anniversary of the Knox-Keene Act and a 10-year anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. This slide is an infographic from our 2020 annual report, which is available on our website. I won't go over every detail in this slide, but we do want to highlight at the end of 2020, we had 132 licensed plans. Excuse me one second. And 27.7 million Californians' healthcare rights were protected by the DMHC. That represents 95% of state-regulated commercial and public health plan enrollment, which is regulated by the DMHC. Our help center educates consumers about their rights, resolves consumer complaints, helps consumers navigate and understand their coverage, and ensures access to healthcare services. And as of our 2020 report, we have assisted over 2.5 million consumers. As you can see, our coverage, a little over half are in commercial coverage of the 27.7 million, and the other, a little bit under half, are in government coverage, including Medi-Cal and Medicare Advantage. And this shows our slight growth from 2016 to 2020. Our leadership team, and we're happy to announce, I think, since this conference last year, we have a full leadership team led by the director. Mary Watanabe was officially appointed at the end of 2020. Our Chief Deputy Director, Dan Southard, assumed the role in March of 2020, and every other position that probably last year was either acting or vacant has now been filled. So we're excited as we head into 2022 with a full leadership team. Well, I want to start to talk briefly about DMHC's response to COVID-19. Again, I'll just talk briefly about the continued response as we have been providing updates for about 18 months now. Since March 2020, we have issued over 30 all-plan letters that respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. I won't go into detail on every one of those all-plan letters, but they, just to kind of summarize, they did include requests to support the move to telehealth and providing other flexibilities. There were also requests to plans to do more to support hospitals as they were increasingly impacted, and to do more to support providers impacted by office closures, canceled procedures, reduced office visits, and increased cost of purchasing personal protective equipment or PPE. Other guidance that we sent out via all plan letters included to support the state's response to COVID-19, included us leaning into expanded testing and contact tracing, with equity being the primary focus in everything we have done to ensure that we are not leaving behind our most vulnerable populations and communities of color in our response. In addition to the over 30, which might be closer to 40, all plan letters we have issued since March 2020, the department also issued two emergency regulations, the first related to coverage of COVID-19 diagnostic testing, and the second, which is it continues to be in effect, related to hospital transfers and speeding up the process for transfers in impacted areas. The two latest all plan letters we have issued in the last month. The first is a clarifying all plan letter on all of the continued applicability of COVID-19 previous all plan letters. And the second is directing plans to take steps to prepare for the influenza vaccines, and then second, to prepare for the vaccines that were approved for children aged 5 to 11 earlier this month. We continue to monitor COVID-19, and everything we have done is on our website. We have a COVID-19 update webpage. I want to take this opportunity now to talk about DMHC's priorities in 2021 and in 2022 as we are quickly approaching the new year. First, as I previously mentioned, some of the work we've done will be our COVID-19 continued response and recovery. We'll continue to support the state's response to COVID-19 and hopefully one day, very soon, our recovery from COVID-19. We are also, as we head into the winter months, we are preparing should there be another winter surge in the months ahead. We'll be communicating anything we do to the plans and our stakeholders should there be another winter surge. Health equity has been something we've been talking about and thinking about in every aspect of the work we do as an organization and in the work that we put out to the community. We know that COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the systemic racism and discrimination that has created social, economic, and health inequities, contributing to the disproportionately higher infection and mortality rates of both chronic and infectious diseases. The state's budget included a number of initiatives to address health inequities, including new work for the DMHC, which I will discuss later. Behavioral health. Last year, the governor signed SB 855, which made significant changes to the state's mental health parity requirements and the requirements on plans. In addition, DMHC has received funding to conduct five-year focused behavioral health investigations on all commercial plans related to access of behavioral health services. The goal of these investigations are to better understand how consumers navigate the behavioral health system, where barriers are, and health plan compliance with the laws related to behavioral health. We are beginning or almost completing year one, which included review of Sutter, Cigna, Contra Costa, Community Care, and Ventura County health plans. And we move into 2022, we'll move into year two of the behavioral health focused investigations, where we will be reviewing Alameda Alliance for Health, Sharp Health Plan, Kaiser Permanente, Anthem Blue Cross, and Western Health Advantage. Again, there's a quick one sheet on our website about the behavioral health investigations. Affordability. We know, despite the gains in access to healthcare, we continue to see the cost of healthcare increase. One area that we will continue to monitor closely is the impact of COVID on the cost of healthcare. In addition, we continue to see consolidation in the market. Private equity and venture capitalists in all areas of the healthcare delivery system, we are looking at, will that raise concerns about affordability and competition? Our access to care as one of our priorities is broken down into three main areas: network adequacy, telehealth, and timely access to care. The last few years, we continue to refine our system, processes, and requirements to assess network adequacy. We also have regulations to codify our timely access methodology and rate of compliance, which we expect to be finalized soon. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. One particular area of focus is how COVID has impacted our provider offices. We have heard about practices closing, providers retiring, practices reducing staff, and reducing hours. We want to make sure that consumers are safely getting the care they need and that we continue to have an adequate network of providers. The other area of focus is telehealth and how we maintain the gains that we have made in the expansion of access to telehealth services over the last 2 years. We want to make sure we still have an adequate network available to see consumers with the appropriate consumer protections to allow for choice, but also making sure we leverage telehealth in the areas and specialties that it's appropriate to use. And finally, we are finalizing our regulation on timely access to care, which has been in the work for over 5 years. This regulation will codify our methodology for measuring timely access to care and set a rate of compliance at 70%. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we discuss our regulation packages that we're working on this year. Lastly, one of our priorities and something that will keep us very busy at the end of 2021, headed into 2022, will be legislation implementation and the regulation packages that we are currently reviewing and working on. So for our regulations update, I just want to say, point out that we have an unprecedented number of regulation packages that we are working on right now, in addition to legislation implementation. I'll speak briefly about a few of our regulations, but please know this is not an exhaustive list, and the work will still continue on regulations that we have in our timeline coming up. So first, and this might be, you can see we've talked about it now three times because it is so important, is timely access to care. These regulations provide a standardized methodology for how plans measure and report timely access to care requirements. The goal of the regulations is to ensure plans collect and provide meaningful data so the DMHC and public can access whether plans networks are able to meet the timely access needs of their enrollees. Our third comment period closed earlier this year, and the DMHC submitted the regulation to the Office of Administrative Law on August 2nd. Due to various extensions related with COVID-19, the Office of Administrative Law has until mid-March to conduct their review, to complete their review rather. SB 1008 relates to a uniform dental benefits matrix. We had an emergency regulation on this topic filed December 30th of 2020. The emergency rulemaking was readopted and approved by the Office of Administrative Law on September 22nd, 2021. That's currently in effect. The DMHC filed a regular or non-emergency rulemaking package on July 23rd, 2021, which is not yet finalized. Again, with COVID, things have taken a little bit longer and some of the rulemaking timelines have been extended. Until the non-emergency regulation takes effect, the emergency regulation will remain in place. The department anticipates issuing an all-plan letter with additional information regarding the summary of dental benefit matrix, likely within the next month. SB 600 clarified that standard fertility preservation services are basic healthcare services when a covered treatment may directly or indirectly cause iatrogenic infertility. The department has been working on the regulations to implement this bill and will be sharing draft regulations with stakeholders shortly. We hope to do so before the end of the year. SB 855, I mentioned briefly when we were talking about behavioral health that it has really been a heavy lift this year to try to implement the bill and get our regulation package out. This bill took effect January 1, and it is intended to ensure plans cover behavioral health conditions at parity with medical conditions. SB 855 requires plans to cover treatment of all mental health and substance use disorders. Additionally, the bill specifically defines medical necessity in the context of mental health and substance use disorder treatment. Finally, the bill states plans must use nonprofit criteria in conducting utilization management to determine medical necessity. We have been working with stakeholders to develop regulations to clarify various provisions in SB 855 over the last year and hope to have a draft to share with stakeholders also before the end of the year. Lastly, I want to talk about our provider directory regulation, SB 137, which was enacted in 2015, required the DMHC to establish provider directory standards. SB 137 allowed the DMHC to create and apply these standards through 2020 without having to go through the formal rulemaking process. The regulations at the DMHC is developing largely codify the standards the DMHC created and has been applying since 2015. We plan to share the draft text with stakeholders also before the end of the year. So as you can see, things will be busy for the next 6 weeks. Again, this is not all the regulations they're working on. These are the ones that we feel are probably furthest along, and there will be some finality soon. Moving on to legislative updates, before I get into the specific bills that we've been looking at, I just want to talk a bit briefly about our legislative implementation process. As many of you know, we have a very short turnaround time from when the governor signs bills until when many new bills become effective on January 1st. We are currently meeting to work through implementation activities internally on each of the bills the governor has signed and determining what guidance may be needed, we need to provide, and where regulations will be required. We try to issue guidance before the end of the year, but due to various levels of review, sometimes that takes a little bit longer. We will be issuing a general legislation implementation all-plan letter, which requires plans to attest to compliance or make a filing demonstrating compliance with the majority of the bills. Some bills, we will work on separate all-plan letters for those that require more guidance or have more complex filing requirements. These are the bills where we usually need to have a more in-depth stakeholder process in advance of issuing guidance. In addition to the work that we do internally at DMHC, we also have been working closely with the California Department of Insurance on many of these implementation activities for these bills. So before we get into the specifics of the bills, I just want to say it has been an extremely busy legislative session. The governor signed 18 bills that directly impact the Department of Managed Health Care. Again, we will be working with stakeholders to implement many of these bills. I'm going to provide a more detailed overview of the bills that are likely to be of most interest to this audience, but the next slide I'm going to present includes a few that we are tracking. We'll give a brief description on, but we won't go into great detail. AB 326 by Assemblymember Rivas. This bill makes the Consumer Participation Program administered by the DMHC a permanent program by removing the existing sunset date in existing law. AB 342 by Assemblymember Gibson requires health plans, contracts, and health insurance policies to cover at zero cost sharing a colorectal cancer screening exam test assigned either a grade A or B by the United States Preventive Task Force. This bill is in line with the recommendations issued in May 2021 by the USPSTF. AB 457 by Assemblymember Santiago enacts the Protection of Patient Choice in Telehealth Provider Act to encourage the use of local in-network services where available and ensure patient record continuity when a health plan enrollees choose to seek services from corporate telehealth providers. AB 570, also by Assemblymember Santiago, expands the definition of dependent for the purposes of obtaining healthcare coverage to include a parent or step-parent of an adult child. The bill requires individual market plans that provide dependent coverage to make coverage available to qualifying dependent parents and step-parents who live or reside within the health plan service area. AB 1184 by Assemblymember Chu revises certain provisions of the Confidentiality of Medical Information Act to require health plans to automatically communicate directly with an enrollee receiving sensitive services without the enrollee having to go to the primary subscriber for approval. And lastly, SB 255 by Senator Portantino and SB 718 by Senator Bates. Both these bills allow a specific association of employers, generally known as association health plans, to offer large group health plan contract if certain conditions are met. These bills are both intended to create a narrow exception to existing law, which prohibits the sale of group products to ineligible employers or individuals. And these are only, each bill is only for one specific association health plan each. So with that, we'll talk a little bit more in depth about, I think we have about 5 to 7 bills that I want to talk a little bit more about. AB 347 by Assemblymember Arambula relates to step therapy exceptions. Effective January 1st, sorry, 2022, a health plan or insurer must expeditiously grant a request for a step therapy exception if a prescribing provider determines that the drug required under step therapy is inconsistent with good professional practice for the provision of medically necessary covered services, while also considering the enrollee's circumstances. SB 221 by Senator Weiner places portions of the timely access standards previously adopted in regulation by the DMHC into the Health and Safety Code and Insurance Code. This bill further specifies a 10 business day timely access standard for follow-up appointments for certain mental health and substance use disorder providers, and that requirement is beginning July 1st, 2022. SB 242 by Senator Newman says effective January 1st, 2022, the bill requires health plans and insurers to reimburse contracting physicians and dentists for the cost of personal protective equipment, also known as PPE, and additional supplies, materials, and clinical staff time made necessary by a future public health emergency due to a respiratory transmitted infectious disease. So most notably, as this bill went through the legislative process, it was amended to state that it does not apply to the COVID-19 state of emergency and will not apply to the COVID-19 state of emergency come 2022. So this is a bill, a framework for future pandemics. SB 306 by Senator Pan says effective January 1st, 2022, the bill requires health plans and insurers to cover sexually transmitted disease at-home test kits. The bill also updates California's current expedited partner therapy statute to include provider liability protections and permits pharmacists to provide EPT or expedited partner therapy treatment. SB 326, also by Senator Pan, effective January 1, 2022, this bill codifies many of the Federal Affordable Care Act consumer protections in state statute in the Health and Safety Code and Insurance Codes by deleting language in current statute commonly known as tiebacks. Protections include guaranteed issuance and renewability, a ban on pre-existing condition exclusions, rates based solely on age and region, and the requirement to provide all 10 essential health benefits. SB 368 by Senator Limon states that effective July 1, 2022, the bill requires a health plan, a contract, or health insurance policy issued, amended, or renewed in the individual or group market to monitor an enrollee's accrual balance towards their annual deductible and their out-of-pocket maximum. Requires health plans to provide an enrollee with an accrual balance for every month in which benefits are used and until the accrual balance equals the full deductible or out-of-pocket maximum amount. SB 428 by Senator Hurtado, effective January 1, 2022. This bill requires all health plan contract or health insurance policies to provide coverage for adverse childhood experience screenings, also known as ACEs. The bill applies to health plans and policies that cover pediatric services and preventative care. SB 510 by Senator Pan states, effective January 1st, 2022, with the retroactivity clause of effectiveness to March 4th, 2020, this bill requires health plans and insurers to cover the costs associated with diagnostic and screening testing for and immunization against COVID-19 without cost sharing, prior authorization, utilization management, or in-network requirements. The bill further prohibits health plans from delegating such costs to providers without a renegotiation of contract terms. The bill further applies a similar framework for testing and immunizations during a future public health emergency. And as I said, in terms of working with stakeholders and collecting feedback, we anticipate and we have begun holding stakeholder discussions this fall in advance of releasing guidance for SB 510 under an all plan letter. There are areas where we believe we can provide additional clarification to address concerns around fraud and abuse. However, there are some areas where we're looking into the interplay of federal law, specifically the Families First Coronavirus Recovery Act and the CARES Act. So there are some areas where federal law will prevail. We encourage everyone to start thinking or continue thinking about what additional guidance we can provide or any areas where clarification is needed. And again, our goal on this one is to get guidance out before the end of the year. The last bill I'm going to talk to you about today is, excuse me, SB 535 by Senator Limon. This bill says effective July 1, 2022, the bill prohibits health plan or insurer from requiring prior authorization for non-experimental biomarker testing for an enrollee with either advanced or metastatic stage 3 or 4 cancer or progression or recurrence with advanced stage 3 or 4 cancer. So that was the end of the specific standalone bills legislation. As you can see, we have a lot on our plate, and we will be working again throughout the fall and early into winter to begin to operationalize all the bills listed. Many have a January 1 effective date, some have July 1 effective date, but where the work continues. But I wanted to talk about, before I take any questions if we have time, I wanted to talk about two initiatives that DMHC will be working on with our partners at the California Health and Human Service Agency. I wanted to first mention the Children and Youth Behavioral Health Initiative. This was funded in this year's state budget, included the funding for the Children and Youth Behavioral Health Initiative, which is a multi-year, $4 billion effort to provide access to behavioral health services in schools or linked through schools for all children and youth age 0 to 25. The DMHC will be working with plans in the coming months and in the coming years, and this is a multi-year initiative, on a reimbursement model for commercial enrollees who are accessing services in schools. There are, as you can imagine, a lot of details to work out, but we view this as an exciting opportunity to focus on early identification and early intervention related to behavioral health issues for our youth population. Specifically, just kind of language from the budget, it directs DMHC on or after January 1, 2024, health plans must reimburse health plan, I'm sorry, mental health and substance use disorder treatment provided by schools without utilization management. And the language currently states the greater of the contracted rate or the fee for service rate schedule to be developed by the Department of Healthcare Services. What we'll be doing is conducting stakeholder meetings over the next 1 to 2 years. And we are directed in the budget to issue guidance on the Children and Youth Behavioral Health Initiative before or on or by December 31st, 2023. We're also participating with the other departments and the California Health and Human Services Agency to look at all aspects of the CYBHI and to use our existing stakeholder processes to make sure the information is out and feedback is taken in on this new and what we view as a very exciting endeavor. And we mentioned health equity in our priorities, so I wanted to close with one of our top priorities, and that is the DMHC will be establishing a Health Equity and Quality Committee to make recommendations on a priority set of standard quality measures, including quality and health equity benchmark standards, to be reported by full service and behavioral health specialized plans starting in measurement year 2023. The department will also have the authority, after developing the standards, to take enforcement actions against non-compliant health plans. So, what the first task we have ahead of us will be to convene the committee by March 1st, 2022, and that committee will provide recommendations on equity and quality benchmarks to the director by September 30th, 2022. So a pretty quick turnaround. I'm glad to say our solicitation process, we had a robust call. Many people answered the call. We're currently right now finalizing the committee and hope to meet on or before March 1st, 2022. And then after the benchmarks are approved, we have the ability to revisit them. And then beginning in 2025, the health plans will be responsible for full compliance and the DMHC will publish an annual health equity and quality compliance report. So with that, it was we went over a lot of different topics, and I think we have about 5 minutes left. So I'm happy to take any questions at this time.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Amanda. So if anyone has any questions, please enter them into the question pane, and I will share them with Amanda. We have one question right now. This is from Christopher McGlone. And Christopher says, physician practices are struggling with staffing, as are many other industries. How will the DMHC take this into account when looking at access standards?
I think that's a good question, and I think that's something that we are looking at right now. Like I said previously, we hope to tie that to timely access standards, and we're continuing to monitor the health of staffing in both hospitals and in provider offices. So I will say, I don't know that we have full details on how that will be incorporated into the work we do, but it's certainly something that we are aware of and will make a priority to address in the coming year.
Okay, very good. Next question. This question is coming from Devin Ottman, and the question is, can you elaborate more on the provider directory requirements?
Elaborate on the provider directories. I think we'll have more information to share in the next month or so, but we're just looking to implement the bill to use the standards that we've been going under for the last 5 years and to ensure that consumers have access to accurate provider directories when they're choosing a health plan provider. So we will have more information, more details in the coming months.
Okay, very good. This next question is from Martin Arona, and the question is, regarding SB 855, are the medical providing delegates responsible for their training for eating disorder with medical instability and ACT detox when there are admissions to hospitals?
I believe we'll be clarifying everything in our all plan letters, but right now, under the new standards, we moved from 9 specific severe mental illness to everything located in the DSM current edition, which is DSM-5. So I believe there will be that eating disorders are included, and we will delineate that probably further in our regulations.
Okay, very good. That is all the questions that we have received at this time. So I'm going to bring Mike Myers back in, and we can wrap up the session.
Thank you so much, Amanda. Appreciate all the information, and as always, appreciate our partnership with DMHC and your presentation today. Thank you so much. On behalf of HEIS and our presenters, I want to thank everybody for joining us for this session this morning and for joining us at our virtual conference.